PBS Kids opens worlds of possibilities for all children, thanks to PBS stations and viewers like you.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
There. That does it. I'm at the end of my rope here. I'm trying to help out my friend Paul in his warehouse, but this place is so disorganized, I can't get anything done. You know, if these parts were numbered, it'd be a whole lot easier. There's absolutely no place to work here. No one calculated how much to use per box. The scale only goes to 5 pounds. What am I gonna do? Weigh this twice? Hello? Oh, Paul.
Let's go.
How's it going? What do you mean, how's it going? I gotta tell you, not so good. This place is a disaster. It needs organization. It needs... You know what this place needs?
What?
It needs math.
Math.
I mean, everyone else is using it all the time.
Using math, I determine the length of the foot, the width of the foot, and the arch length of the foot.
Counting the number of garments they bring in is math. Adding up the invoice, the prices.
1, 2, 3, 2.
I'm trying to match up numbers.
That's what math got to do. Got to do it.
11 by 14.
14 and a half by 15.
That's what math got to do. Got to do it.
I'm gonna use 20 pieces.
80 degrees.
Innovation, using all the information. It's kinetic, energetic, if you've got the right relation.
The whole idea is to match up the patterns perfectly.
Put them all together, add them up, and when you're through with it, that's what math got to do, got to do it.
8 slices.
I like the math color.
Exploration, using your imagination. Geometric, it's electric, if you got the right equation. Now put them all together, add them up, and when you're through with it, that's what math got to do, got to do it.
This recipe calls for a cup of flour and a half cup of sugar.
Put them all together, add them up, and when you're through with it, that's what math got to do it.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
You do? Great. Then I'll put math to work here right away. I am determined to use math to help get this place in order. So the first thing I'll do is I'll take all of these gifts and I'll rearrange them into groups based on size. Then, I'll measure some paper, wrap the gifts, pack them up, and have them ready by, 5 o'clock, just in time for the overnight delivery pickup. You see, math is a way of thinking of things. It helps us find solutions to our problems. Unless, of course, you're only focusing on the problem, and in that case, you'll only end up going in circles. And that's what happens at first to the girl in this book. It's called Math Curse.
Math Curse. By
by John Sheska, plus Lane Smith. Narrated by Michelle Trachtenberg. On Monday in math class, Mrs. Fibonacci says, "You know, you can think of almost everything as a math problem." On Tuesday, I start having problems. I wake up at 7:15. It takes me 10 minutes to get dressed, 15 minutes to eat my breakfast, and 1 minute to brush my teeth. Suddenly, it's a problem. If my bus leaves at 8, will I make it on time? How many minutes in 1 hour? How many teeth in one mouth? I look in my closet, and the problems get worse. I have one shirt, three blue shirts, three striped shirts, and that ugly plaid shirt my Uncle Zeno sent me. One. How many shirts is that altogether? Two. How many shirts would I have if I threw away that awful plaid shirt? Three. When will Uncle Zeno quit sending me such ugly shirts? I'm getting a little worried. Everything seems to be a problem. I take the milk out from my cereal and wonder, how many quarts in a gallon? How many pints in a quart? How many inches in a foot? How many feet in a yard? How many yards in a neighborhood? How many inches in a pint? How many feet in my shoes? Mrs. Fibonacci has obviously put a math curse on me. Everything I look at or think about has become a math problem. I tried to get on the bus without thinking about anything, but there are 5 kids already on the bus. 5 kids get on at my stop, 5 more get on at the next stop, and 5 more get on at the last stop. True or false, what is the bus driver's name? The whole morning is one problem after another. There are 24 kids in my class. I just know someone is going to bring in cupcakes to share. We sit in 4 rows with 6 desks in each row. What if Mrs. Fibonacci rearranges the desks to make 6 rows, 8 rows, 3 rows, 2 rows? I'm about to really lose it when the lunch bell rings. Fortunately for me, lunch is pizza and apple pie. Each pizza is cut into 8 equal slices. Each pie is cut into 6 equal slices. And you know what that means? Fractions. If I want 2 slices of pizza, should I ask for 1/8, 2/8, or 2 slices of pizza? What is another way to say half of an apple pie? 2/6, 3/6, la moitié d'une tarte aux pommes. Which tastes greater? Half a pizza, half an apple pie. In art, we finally get to relax with a connect the dot picture. Here's my picture. Too bad it turns out to be a connect the ancient Mayan numerals picture. I stagger out of school. I'm a math zombie now. What if this keeps up for a whole year? How many minutes of math madness would that be? What's your problem, says my sister. 365 days times 24 hours times 60 minutes, I snarl. I think I'd better go to bed. Then the problems really begin. I dream I'm trapped in a room with no doors and no windows. The room is covered with a lifetime of problems. I only have 1 piece of chalk. How do I get out? I'm about to give up and die when the answer to my problem comes to me. Fractions. I break the chalk in half. Then I put the 2 halves together. 1 half plus 1 half equals 1 whole. I put the hole on the wall and jump out. I'm free! I wake up on Wednesday morning at 7:15. It takes me 10 minutes to get dressed, 15 minutes to eat my breakfast, and 1 minute to brush my teeth. My bus leaves at 8. What time will I be ready? 7:41. No problem. I've broken the math curse. I can solve any problem, and life is just great.
Until science class, when Mr. Newton says,
"You know, you can think of almost everything as a science experiment."
Take a look at this. I think I've got the situation worked out. Huh? Now, watch this. Perfect. When you realize that math is a way to solve problems, you begin to see it as a cure, not a curse. Math guides you through countless situations every day, whether you're aware of it or not. Well, think about it. How have you used math today?
When you're on an elevator, there's lots of buttons, and you have to press a button, and you're using math.
When I'm counting money, I'm using math.
When I pack my backpack, I have to know how much stuff will fit.
I know how tall I am because my mom measures me at home.
When my mom says to clean up the living room, it doesn't mean half. It means the entire thing.
When I make pancakes, I measure everything.
When I use my Legos, I use 10 on one side, and then I use 10 on the other side, so it'll be even.
When I go buy a carpet, before I do, I measure the floor so that when I get the carpet fits perfect.
People use math in amazingly different ways. Math is so much more than just 1 + 1 = 2. For example, do you think the artist who made this or this used mathematical thinking to create it? Well, a calculated guess would be yes. Most artists find that math figures into everything they make, and Deborah Golitz is no exception. She's currently working on several murals for the New York subway system at Sheepshead Bay. This community is near the ocean, so fish is the central theme of her murals.
Usually I'll start by making some drawings in my sketchbook, and when I find one I like, I'll make a full-blown drawing using color, and I'll even start to draw in the fish tiles in the background from it. To make the fish tile, I drew 5 circles, and the center circle next to the other circles became the shape of the tile. The width of the tile is the same as the diameter of the circle. This mural will need about 200 fish tile. I'm going to use a special cutter I had made to cut out shapes. And the only difference between this and a cookie cutter is that it has a wooden board on the inside that pushes the clay out when I push this handle. I can cut out 15 shapes out of 25 pounds of clay. Now I'll put the blank cutout piece of clay into my mold so it can make the impression of the fish tile. These are some fish tile I've just made from wet clay. Now after they're fired once, they shrink a bit in size. I need to know how much it shrinks in order to gauge the final size of the mural. So I make a ruler out of clay and I fire it so I can compare exactly how much the shrinkage rate is. In this case, it's about 11%. Then I draw my picture, very large, onto a plastic piece of paper, and I trace the images from the sheet onto the clay. When I trace the image of the fisherman onto it, I cut out the pieces where the fisherman is going to go. I remove those fish tile pieces, creating this blank space. And then I fill that blank space in with tiles that I cut out in the shape of the fisherman. I have numbers on the back of every tile, and I have a chart that lets me keep track of the numbers so I can put them back in their same spots. This mural has been fired once already, but not glazed yet. When it's glazed, it'll look like this one, colorful and ready to install. It's like decorating a cake. Because of their shape, the tiles fit together like a jigsaw puzzle. Since all the tiles have been glued to a mesh background, I can install them in sections. When I see my work in the subway stations or in another place, it feels very nice. I love what I do, and math is definitely a tool, just as much as my ruler or my hands.
Now that's what math got to do with it. Come on all together, add a book, and when you're through with it, now that's what math got to do with it.
It is amazing how difficult it is to sort things. I've got big packages and little packages, some going on the ground, some traveling by air. Whew! Well, if you think this is a mathematical achievement, imagine trying to ship millions of packages to hundreds of countries every single day. Behind the scenes at a Federal Express sorting center, you'll find tens of thousands of packages going this way or that. And each is heading to a different destination. Patrick Coleman is a ramp agent at FedEx. After 8 years on the job, he knows the system inside and out.
What's happening here now is we're sorting packages. FedEx has got the largest and biggest sort facility that I know of. It's just like a gigantic video game. A lot of companies like to say that they can do the job that we can, but no one sorts packages like FedEx.
The process begins when a Federal Express courier picks up a package. She immediately scans the box, which electronically tells FedEx the package is in their hands.
Thank you, thank you. Have a good day.
Then all the boxes and letters the couriers have picked up are transferred to a big rig. The truck drives to a huge building called a hub, or sorting center, and backs right in. The packages are unloaded onto a conveyor belt, which will sort each package and route it to its final destination.
The building is approximately over 2 football fields long and houses at any given time anywhere from 500 to 1,000 employees. By use of levers and belts, we're routing packages to destinations all over the United States and a lot of different countries internationally.
The belt carries the packages to a scanner, which weighs each box and measures its size with invisible laser beams.
The dimensional scanner uses information such as the length, width, and height to produce the volume of a package or the amount of freight or space contained inside the package.
A mathematical formula based on weight and size tells FedEx how much to charge the customer for shipping the package.
The packages are now flowing towards a multi-directional scanner, which is a group of 14 different cameras that read the labels anywhere on the package except for the bottom.
The label tells the scanner where the box is being shipped. Once this information is in the computer, the machinery knows exactly what to do.
The next step in the sorting process is done by the diverter, which is simply going to do nothing more than push the package down the appropriate slide, beginning the process of sending the packages to the outbound areas.
Leading off of the beltway, there are 9 slides, or chutes, which represent different parts of the United States. This box is headed to the Southwest, and that one is heading for New England. Odd-sized boxes and packages with labels that can't be read are sorted manually or by hand.
Any light other than a green scan means that the packages are going to have to go to the manual sorting area, which is where employees will have to sort the packages by hand.
All the packages that are coming down that the scanner misses, what I do is push it down to the proper destination. Every station has a designated code that they look at. This one says C7. C7 means California. What I do is just push it down so that it goes to the proper destination.
Once the package is scanned, sorted, and routed, it's loaded into a large cargo container.
Now in the outbound area of our sorting process, what you'll see in this area are containers of all different shapes and sizes that once they're loaded with freight, we pull out of these positions and out into these really cool rollers, which allow us to move the containers around very easily. Then we'll pull them all the way forward onto this big yellow area here, which is actually a scale. And we do this because we need the weight on every container, no matter how it travels through our system.
Every inch of the container is filled. Is this the model of efficiency or what?
Each container has a shape specifically designed to allow it to fit in the aircraft that it's going to be on. If you notice, they're not all perfectly square. Like this one here, this big boy has a slant. And what that allows the container to do is to fit into the aircraft, which is rounded or oval shaped.
Now that the packages have been routed in the right direction, the FedEx air fleet must be too. This happens at the FedEx Control Center.
This is Global Operations Control.
FedEx 2000, go ahead.
What the people in this room are responsible for are all the flights that are coming into and leaving the Newark Airport that belong to Federal Express. We change over our fleet probably about 5 times a day. We're looking at the weather parameters. Is the flight going to be able to make it in? We're monitoring what's going on this airport as far as delays, inbound delays, outbound. We're monitoring the trucks that are feeding the sorts and taking freight away from the sorts.
And just as the planes are being monitored, so are the packages.
This screen is showing how much was put into the system. We have a primary sort and we have a secondary sort. At this time, there are about 18,000 packages being put through the system. We also have a flow rate showing how much each primary is processing.
Right on time, the packages take to the air. When the FedEx jet lands at its destination, the packages go to a sorting center just like before, except now they're in a different city. Once on a truck, FedEx couriers drive each package to the exact location specified on the label. It's delivered right to your door, right on schedule.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your day.
Thank you, you too.
Wow. Now that's what I call mathematizing to the max. So, if you would like to multiply your pleasure, here are 3 additions to your reading list that are greater than the sum of their parts. But you don't have to take my word for it.
Did you ever have the kind of day where you wanted to go someplace but you ran out of time? Well, I have, and so did a family of pigs in this book called Pigs on a Blanket. One hot day, the pigs decided to drive to the beach for a swim. Ready, set, go, said Mrs. Pig. At 1:45, the pigs hit the road. Boy, were they late. Uh-oh, Mr. Pig is getting a speeding ticket. Finally, they made it to the beach. But wouldn't you know it, beach closed 5:30. Even though everybody in the book was wearing a watch, no one kept track of the time. I'm Eric Toby, and before your day is over, go read Pigs on a Blanket.
How would you measure a river if you didn't have a ruler? I'm Sharif Ali, and in this book, 12 Snails to 1 Lizard, I found out. Milo is a beaver trying to fix a hole in a dam. He asks his friend Bubba to help him out. They need to find a log 36 inches long. How long is an inch? Bubba says an inch is about the size of a snail. So they get 36 snails. The illustrations are colorful and funny. I recommend 12 Snails to 1 Lizard for the math and for the fun.
Hey kids! Did you know that math is everywhere you go? Yikes! Math is even in the poems in this book. It's called Marvelous Math. These poems show you neat stuff, like how you need math to build a house, or to count birds, or to even do things called fractions. My favorite poem in the book is called Take a Number. It's about life without numbers or math. Math is in our cities, towns, and nature, too. These poems have cool words that are fun to say, like this cool math thing called algebra, and the value of X, and even this guy named Pythagoras. My name is Caitlin, and take it from me. Go to the library and check out this book, Marvelous Math.
Yeah, Paul, that's right. It's done. The boxes are packed and stacked and all ready to be shipped out. You bet. Well, you're welcome. Well, we did it. I used math to tackle every problem, and I managed to solve every one. You know, when you think about it, there are about a million different ways you can put math to work for you. It's like I've always said, math is something you can really count on. I'll see you next time. Well, now, let's see. If I turn right instead of left and cut diagonal. Today's Reading Rainbow books are Math Curse by John Sheska, illustrated by Lane Smith, published by Viking, a division of Penguin Books USA Incorporated. Marvelous Math by Lee Bennett Hopkins, illustrated by Karen Barber, published by Simon & Schuster Incorporated. 12 Snails to One Lizard by Susan Hightower, illustrated by Matt Novak, published by Simon & Schuster Incorporated. Pigs on a Blanket by Amy Axelrod, illustrated by Sharon McGinley Nally, published by Simon & Schuster Incorporated.